Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Joe Biden was sworn in today as the 46th president of the United States. It's the moment he's been working towards my entire life.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with MSNBC's Chris Hayes. But first, a closer look.
The Trump presidency officially ended today as Joe Biden was inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States. And, wow. All right. So that's what it feels like when you're not grinding your teeth. I forgot. And I think, yeah, I can see colors again. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. You know, over the last 4 years, whenever I imagined myself finally saying those words, I pictured us surrounded by a jubilant audience, reveling in the collective catharsis of watching this wretched, awful man slink away from the seat of power like a drunk who got kicked out of a bar at 3 a.m. for trying to steal the free pretzels. No, these are my home pretzels. I brought these pretzels from my home. Instead, I'm alone in an empty studio. No pomp, no fanfare, no senior citizens bust in from Paramus who were told they had tickets to Dr. Oz. The only celebration we could manage was Wally holding a single balloon covered in Purell. Keep that party going, Wally. And the reason for that is, even amid this moment of collective relief, the nation is still in the midst of several unprecedented calamities, none of which will magically disappear anytime soon. It's a little like getting rid of the last guy at a party. We spent 4 years yawning and stretching and hinting that he should get out. And when he finally leaves, it is a relief until you remember you still have to clean up all his puke. And he, like, puked everywhere. Luckily, we had this guy working at the inauguration. Sir, who are you and why do you rule so much? I knew they were taking extra precautions after the raid on the Capitol, but apparently none are more prepared than Scarf Man. Beautiful old scarf draped loosely around the neck, one mask peeking out of a second mask, a pack of wet wipes that, like many of you, I confused for a pack of Oreo minis. Is that guy about to eat Oreos close to the mic in some kind of inauguration ASMR? Later in the day, we got to see the Bidens enter the White House residence, but before they did, the White House itself went through a deep cleaning as soon as Trump left.
There's a deep clean of the residence because of COVID, which includes, you know, vacuuming drapes, wiping baseboards, cleaning chandeliers.
Scrubbing out Diet Coke rings, pulling loose hair out of the drains, trying to get ketchup off the Constitution. I know they're saying the deep clean is because of COVID, but I mean, even without the pandemic, if I were moving in after Trump anywhere, I'd want the place fumigated. The guy was glued to his TV, barely left his bedroom, and only ate fast food. That place probably looks like a locker on Storage Wars or a studio apartment in a rent-controlled building after the tenant who's lived there for 80 years dies. Just piles of old newspapers, loose change, and a collection of weird ceramic pigs.
What do you think, Bessie? Should I concede? Bessie has concerns about the vote count in Georgia.
It's not in Trump's nature to leave on a graceful, dignified note. Instead, he left in shame and disgrace the way he should have, scampering out early in the morning like a college sophomore doing the walk of shame. Though he did give us one final Trump trademark, chopper adjacent, cue and shout. Now that we'll never have to endure another one of these again, can I just ask, how long does it take to start a helicopter? Like, wouldn't it have been better to wait until he got in before firing the thing up? No, no, past is past. Trump, of course, couldn't even muster the bare minimum level of grace and self-assurance to attend his successor's inauguration, but he did apparently want his helicopter to do one last farewell trip around the Capitol.
They just flew over here, over the Capitol, where these preparations are underway for Joe Biden's inauguration. At any moment now, in the next few hours, of course, the inauguration that the president will not be attending, but apparently wanted to see.
He looked upon our nation's capital the way past presidents looked over hurricane damage.
Well, love me or hate me, you have to agree. I f***ed the place up. Mel, are you looking? Mel!
He was too scared to go to the inauguration, but he wanted to see it from afar. He treats the hallowed customs of our democracy like a five-year-old watching a scary movie through his fingers. So he took a whirl around D.C. on the taxpayer's dime. One last no joyride. And now the Biden administration will have to reckon with a series of simultaneous crises unprecedented in our lifetimes. Just because Trump is gone doesn't mean all the destruction he wrought is gone as well. In fact, it's very likely to get worse in the near term, and the conditions that created him will remain as well, unless they're scrubbed from our institutions and our system and our public life. But I do think a small step forward was hearing the incoming president, on the eve of his inauguration, acknowledge the very real human toll of the pandemic.
To heal, we must remember. It's hard sometimes to remember. But that's how we heal.
I have to say, I was very moved by that because there's been this weird collective erasure of the toll of the pandemic because of the willful criminal neglect of the Trump White House and its allies in the right-wing media, an insistence that it will all go away, that everything's fine, and that what you're seeing and hearing with your own eyes and ears isn't actually happening. And a small first step towards fixing that is acknowledging it. Anyway, very powerful and a welcome change. Now let's hear what the outgoing president had to say.
Have a good life. We will see you soon.
Have a good life? It's not a presidential farewell. That's what your high school crush writes in your yearbook as a final twist of the knife. I guess we won't be seeing each other with me going to Bryn Mawr and you staying here to chase your kickboxing dreams, so have a good life. Although even weirder than that was what Trump said right before, hinting that he might possibly try to make some sort of political comeback if he's not disqualified after the Senate impeachment trial.
So just a goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form.
In some form? What does that mean?
Whenever you see a black plastic bag stuck in a tree or a vulture on the shoulder of the highway pulling the guts out of a dead raccoon, that'll be me. Not the dog turd you wipe off your shoe, but the one that stays stuck in the treads that you need to dig out with a stick, never quite getting it all, because part of me will always be with you. In some form.
So Trump held a pathetic, forgettable going-away party about the size of the lunch rush at Hale and Hearty. In fact, Trump's farewell was snubbed by virtually everyone, from his own vice president to Republicans in Congress. Trump was so desperate for attendees at this thing that those who were invited could bring as many as 5 guests. I worked at SNL for 12 years, and when I go back to see a show, I can't even bring my wife. They even sent invitations to people who turned on Trump and left in disgrace, like Omarosa, John Bolton, and even Anthony Scaramucci, who said he takes it as a sign the White House is desperate to bulk up the guest list. Trust me, that had to be a mass email if one of them got sent to me. Eesh, that is embarrassing. That's like when you get an invite to someone's wedding, even though you only met him once 5 years ago at a friend's barbecue. Honey, do you remember Doug, the guy from the barbecue who wouldn't stop trying to sell us insurance? No? Okay, well, do you want to go to his wedding? He's offering 17 plus ones. And then, of course, there was the fact that in his final address as president, he signed off the way you'd expect, by rambling, stream-of-consciousness style, like he was describing a dream to a therapist.
People have no idea how hard this family worked. We were not a regular administration. Our vets are happy. Our people are happy. Our military is thrilled. If you look at what happened until February a year ago, Our numbers were at a level that nobody had ever seen before. And now the stock market is actually substantially higher than it was at its higher point prior to the pandemic. So it's really, you could say we built it twice. Be careful. Very complex. Be careful. Remember us when you see these things happening, if you would. Remember us. I'm looking at elements of our economy that are set to be a rocket ship up. It's a rocket ship up. We got the vaccine developed in 9 months instead of 9 years or 5 years or 10 years.
Even in his last address to the nation as president, he sounds like a husband making small talk with the doorman while he waits for his wife to come down to the lobby.
So, yeah, my cousin got his master's in 4 years. Could have been 9, 5, 10 years. She should be down soon. Man, this Mets season's off to a crazy start.
Then Trump finished his speech or whatever it was, and in a bizarre spectacle, he waved goodbye to the anemic crowd to the same song he ended his rallies with. Like Grandpa leaving 10 minutes into the wedding reception. And then finally it all ended and we got to watch Air Force One take off with Trump on board as president one last time, presumably setting a course straight for the sun where he would burst into 1,000 rays of light, never to be seen again. Either that or he was making a run for it.
How long can you keep this baby in the air? I need it to last until after they subpoena my tax returns. Look out the window, Mel! Oh, she's not. She's out today.
And then there was the inauguration at the Capitol, the same site that just 2 weeks ago was the scene of a violent insurrection incited by the president. We were treated, on one hand, to scenes of hope and solemn ritual, like the inspiring moment when Capitol Police Officer Eugene Goodman, who bravely led a group of rioters away from the Senate floor, arrived at the ceremony. And then, on the other hand, there was a moment of shamelessness from Ted Cruz, one of the seditionists who tried to subvert the election, taking selfies at the same dais.
I can't tell you how astounding it is here to you know, overlook the west front of the Capitol, the exact spot where just 2 weeks ago rioters, violent supporters of President Trump, were scaling the scaffolding that has now been replaced with bunting. It is remarkable also to see so many of those who had backed the president in this effort, like Senator Ted Cruz, who just a moment ago was snapping selfies.
Who on God's green earth wants a selfie with Ted Cruz? I mean, of course, the main problem with Ted Cruz taking selfies is that the self is Ted Cruz. Good luck finding a filter that makes you look less like a rockabilly muskrat with a wet diaper. But as gross as that was, there were also the genuine signs of promise and hope. Like, for example, the sight of Bernie Sanders showing up in a giant coat and mittens with a bunch of papers in his arms like a public defender whose car stalled in the snow.
I'm here now. I'm here. You can stop talking to my client. Thank you very much. Could someone mail this for me? Bulk is fine.
Although the best Bernie appearance was, of course, this picture of him sitting in his chair by himself like he was at Foot Locker waiting for the salesperson to bring him the next size up. Biden's first act as president should be to replace every Confederate monument in the country with this statue of Bernie Sanders. The plaque can say, come, don't come, it's a statue, who cares? In fact, one of the best things about the new era we entered today is that Bernie will now be the chairman of the powerful Senate Budget Committee, where he'll be able to fight for, among other things, expanded direct payments, unemployment insurance, a $15 minimum wage, and canceling student debt. He'll be able to hold hearings on Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. Hell, he could change the price of coffee in the Senate break room if he wanted to.
$6 for a cup of coffee, that's insane. From now on, you bring your own beans from home, you grind them up in a pencil sharpener, meeting adjourned.
And then came the fanfare and the ritual of the inauguration itself, including performances from megastars J-Lo and Lady Gaga, which was a nice change of pace from the Trump era, when the only musical acts who would associate with the president were Three Doors Down and the kids who got stiffed by Trump. You remember that? When Trump refused to pay a bunch of children who sang at his rallies, and they had to sue him to get their money. Sadly, there won't be any room in the history books for that, but I assure you, here at Late Night, we will never forget. Overall, the day was not short on inspiration, with a benediction from Reverend Sylvester Beeman and an incredible inaugural poem from 22-year-old Amanda Gorman. But perhaps the most stirring words were delivered by Senator Amy Klobuchar to describe J-Lo's rendition of America the Beautiful.
Well, that was great.
That was my aunt's review of Mamma Mia. Well, that was great. I liked all the singing and the dancing. Time to go home. And of course, we also witnessed some breathtaking scenes of history, chief among them the scene of Justice Sonia Sotomayor, the first Latina to serve on the Supreme Court, swearing in Kamala Harris, the first female, the first Black, and the first Asian-American vice president. Then, of course, came the catharsis of seeing a person who was not Donald Trump become president of the United States when Joe Biden officially took the oath of office.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Thank President.
You. Son of a gun. Wally, give that balloon another squirt. There we go. The only bummer was that Biden didn't end the oath by swearing to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States and cut the malarkey, so help me God. Come on, man! Biden's swearing in will also be remembered for having the biggest Bible anyone has ever seen. Does that also have every Amtrak schedule ever? Does it have the lesser-known Gospels? Yeah, this one has Keith. He doesn't add much, but he smells the tea on Matthew. Guy was always late. Then came Biden's speech, his first address to a divided nation as president. And see if you can guess the theme.
It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy. Unity. Unity. With unity, we can do great things, important things. History, faith, and reason show the way of unity. For without unity, there is no peace, only bitterness and fury. And unity is the path forward.
But why won't the Democrats talk about unity? You know, Republicans incited an insurrection and then complained that Democrats aren't trying to unify the nation. Meanwhile, Biden talked more about unity than a marriage counselor who only gets paid if the couple stays together. Ben, you need to validate your wife's feelings more. And Carol, don't repress those emotions. Communicate. Now let's hash this out and grab a brewski at Houlihan's. Like any president, Biden has his strengths and weaknesses. But clearly one strength is his ability to give the nation a pep talk. And in many ways, his inaugural address was basically the halftime speech America needed.
At this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this. We can join forces, stop the shouting, and lower the temperature. And today, we mark the swearing-in of the first woman in American history elected to national office, Vice President Kamala Harris. Don't tell me things can't change. And here we stand, just days after a riotous mob thought they could use violence to silence the will of the people, to stop the work of our democracy, to drive us from this sacred ground. It did not happen. It will never happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Not ever.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought that was pretty uplifting. Can we check in on Bernie real quick and get his reaction to the speech? Okay. All right, he's digging it. I know him. He's digging it. Just hearing a president talk honestly and straightforwardly about our challenges, promising to fight for democracy, or saying phrases like, my whole soul is in it, was both calming and jarring after 4 years of a president who, if he ever mentioned his soul at all, did so in context of selling it.
Hello, is this the devil? How much can I get for the soul? $10? Forget it. And everybody's listened to the soul call with the devil. It was a perfect call. I called the devil. I didn't sell the soul. I got an offer. I said no. It was a perfect call.
Biden also showed deference to previous presidents, including one who couldn't be there.
I know the resilience of our Constitution and the strength of our nation, as does President Carter, who I spoke with last night, who cannot be with us today, but whom we salute for his lifetime and service.
Everyone loves Jimmy Carter. I'm assuming Carter wasn't there because of COVID protocols, although he's such a good person, he's probably with his Habitat for Humanity friends building Trump a house in Palm Springs. It's not as nice as the White House, but if you fill it with love, it'll be more than enough.
Oh, love's gonna be a problem, Jimmy.
But now, the challenge for Biden and for Democrats in Congress is to follow these words with action. Biden began today by announcing plans to sign a raft of executive orders undoing some of Trump's most heinous and destructive policies, and Senate Democrats have unveiled a package of democracy reforms, which are huge first steps. Biden and Democrats in Congress can't shy away from doing what's necessary to fix both what Trump broke and what was broken before him. Trump has left the nation in ruins, and he'll leave as the most disgraced, unpopular president in history. And as for Trump, look, I know today can't be easy for him. So I would like to read a few lines of a verse that I know means a great deal to former President Trump in hopes that it will soothe him on this difficult day. Young man, there's no need to feel down. I said, young man, pick yourself off the ground. I said, young man, because you're in a new town. There's no need to be unhappy. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. This has been a closer look.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Our guest tonight is the best-selling author and the Emmy-winning host of All In with Chris Hayes, which airs weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. Please welcome back to the show our friend Chris Hayes, everybody.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Hey. Listen to them!
Thank you!
Listen to them!
Amazing!
They're never like this!
Oh, I got it.
Hi, buddy. How are
you? How are
you? You know you're now our most frequent guest.
I was told I pulled into the lead today.
Congratulations.
I'm feeling pretty good.
I'm feeling
pretty good about it.
Big deal, big day to do it.
I just called my guy who edits my Wikipedia page.
You have a guy?
No.
I gotta get a guy to do that.
But, by the way, you may just wanna...
I think leading up to today, there were, rightfully so, fears about safety, fears about the many COVID protocols that would have to take place, and that maybe clouded what today could be. And now that it's happened and we've seen the inauguration, did you find optimism in it?
A lot, yeah. I feel, you know, the thing I said last night was my feeling has been like if you've ever been in a near-miss car accident, that feeling afterwards of like, adrenaline and excitement. It's not joy. It's not like you're like, wow, I came real close just there.
especially when you think about, you know, the numerous negatives this president had in the minds of voters, it was so close.
Right.
Like it wasn't in the end, you know, again, there was, as a pure numerical vote count, it was a repudiation, but the Electoral College did not repudiate Donald Trump.
No, I mean, the whole wiring of the system is faulty. I think that's clear, you know? So I think I definitely felt real relief and some joy today, some real hope about what we avoided and how bad it could have been and what we have, through a lot of effort by our fellow Americans of all different kinds of walks of life. I mean, you know, we have this thing, right, where we... You know, we think about these, like, you know, there's the Rust Belt diners and then there's the, like, effete urban college grads or whatever. It's a big country and there were people who were going to Black Lives Matter protests in small towns in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And there were people who were doing women's marches in Idaho. And there's all kinds of people from all kinds of different backgrounds who came together to say, this is not right. And they did it for 4 years and in the end saved the country from what I think would have been essentially its last chapter as the democracy that it used to be.
I think, you know, it's not quite a parallel, but, you know, obviously one of the things that President Biden had to address today is the fact that we have this COVID crisis that, you know, I think due to a real exhaustion with the numbers, with the attention on both the election and the aftermath of the election, and you have done a great job of drawing attention to the fact that we've just sort of normalized this terrible crisis with this growing death toll. And much like, you know, the Obama-Biden administration obviously came into the middle of a financial crisis, but you know, part of when you think about the fact that Donald Trump complained about inauguration size, like, there really wasn't as much going on insofar as, like, a crisis to this magnitude.
Yeah, I mean, again, you keep searching for, like, the right analog or precedent, and there is nothing great. I mean, you know, it was striking to me all the, you know, it is part of our kind of civic sacraments that we talk about Lincoln. Because yeah. Lincoln is, you know, he is this sort of totemic figure, rightly so. But today it had, like, when we talk about the Union, disunion, and uncivil war, when you quote Lincoln, you know, Lincoln took over a nation gripped in what would be its probably worst crisis ever. And FDR was close. And I remember being on the steps in 2009 when we were losing 800,000 jobs a month and looked like the whole thing could go under. This is even worse than that. And I thought that, I think that Biden has done a very good job. I think the whole incoming administration has done a very good job of centering COVID. I mean, one of the weirdest things, surreal and sadistic in its own way, was that because of the narcissism and sociopathic kind of proclivities of the last president, talking about people dying from COVID was viewed by him and his faction as an insult to him personally. It was that you couldn't talk about it because you were then insulting Donald Trump. So this bizarre silence has gripped.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just not, a 41-year-old incoming Republican congressman from Louisiana died of COVID before he could take office. And it was just kind of like that's a horrible tragedy for him, for his family, for this bright life the guy had ahead of him. I mean, but this, I think this kind of heavy blanket of swallowing silence has been lifted. And that's a really important thing.
It does strike me that, and again, we'll see. And I think that, you know, sometimes we talk about tone a lot. And right now what we need is like a plan and results.
Yep.
But it does strike me that President Biden has historically been pretty good framing tragedy and both helping us understand the way to approach it
yep.
and the way to process it. And that really struck me more last night than today. But, you know, at the memorial last night, you realized, oh, this is a guy who understands loss and understands moving forward from loss.
Persistence and endurance
yeah.
and mourning and keeping going. Yeah, I mean, I think in that way, there's a sort of, there is a kind of cosmic alignment of this guy that, you know, I joked today on Twitter that the first time he ran for president was 1988, like, never let go of your dreams. You know, it's like... It's an amazing fact, this guy, you know, 48 years in public life. He's elected as the youngest you could possibly be to enter the Senate, 29 years old, horrible tragedy, lives his entire career. He's only done one thing since he was 30.
Yeah.
Which is be a public figure. And now, you know, at his age to take over this country in crisis, having seen what he's seen and lived through what he's lived through, like, there is a certain kind of weightiness to it all. And I think you're right. I think his instincts on that are right. Now, the other thing you said is so true also. Like, you know, competence and getting stuff done matters more than anything.
Right.
I mean, I thought he hit the right notes today. There are some extremely, supremely competent people that I think highly of in that administration. But it's not easy, the task they have
no.
for themselves. It's not trivial.
And then, you know, and it's really important to know, like, it was never going to be important. Oh, sorry, it was never going to be easy for any administration. It wasn't, I think we were never saying it was easy for the Trump administration to deal with this, you know, crisis. But, you know, ultimately, at some point, you have to have a plan. I want to talk more with Chris. We'll be right back right after this. Look, a lot of attention was paid to it today. But do you think, due to all the noise around this election and the long tail of results that, it's fully sunk in the historic accomplishment of Kamala Harris as vice president?
I was glad that it was hammered home today. I do think it hasn't quite sunk in. I mean, at some level, I think there's something kind of good about that insofar as because that primary cast, that field was so diverse, there was a certain kind of normalizing effect of that. Like,
right.
You know, people... gay and straight, black and white, children of immigrant and not, you know, woman and man, like, that is how it should be. And I do think that following that for a year and a half sort of created sort of expectations. But of course, it's an enormously consequential moment in American history. And obviously, part of the subtext of all the a lot of the battles that we're having over what the sort of future defining feature of the country is.
When you were here right after the election in 2016, you talked about politics always has sort of an opposite reaction. And this belief that if Donald Trump was the opposite of Barack Obama, there would be an opposite to what Donald Trump brought. In the end, is Joe Biden, is the Biden administration the opposite you thought it would be?
That's really interesting. I think in some ways he is, insofar as, you know, all these jokes about sort of boring or traditional.
Yes.
That here's this person who is wildly untraditional and also obsessive about attention in this way that, you know, broke down all these kind of expectations and norms. Joe Biden is the opposite of that. I think it's deeper than personality, though, right? It's about the way the coalitions react. And mm-hmm. I think that, like, you know, when I was on the show 4 years ago right after the election, I talked about this sort of opposite reaction. It's like the day after Trump's inauguration, you had the Million Women March, the Women's March, and you had millions of people in the streets around the country. And that didn't really stop for 4 years, right? Like, that activated this opposite reaction. And today is kind of the fruition of all that work, all of that reaction of people saying, like, no, that's not what I believe my country should be and look like. And that doesn't stop now. Like, that kind of the thermostatic reaction of American popular opinion, right, and the way in which opposition formed, like, the thing we got to figure out, which I thought Biden spoke about well today, is, like, how to make the parry and thrust of politics happen in a box that's more democratic and more normal and less threatening about the end of democracy, which is what we've just kind of, like, narrowly avoided.
Right, which is, you know, again, only 2 weeks ago, and again, President Biden addressed it today. Again, tone is not going to be what solves it, although I think tone here is helpful because you want to bring down the temperature.
Matters
certainly.
A lot, I agree.
How do you, you know, how does a Biden administration move forward and try to, you know, are these people that can be brought to the table?
You know, I don't know. That is the great unsolved question of contemporary American politics. I mean, one of the lessons Barack Obama learned is that you cannot produce unity or cooperation unilaterally. Like, you can do all the things and you can extend your hand, but if Mitch McConnell's like, sorry, dude, you can't make him do anything.
Right.
So that lesson endures. One thing that I think is different here, and I think this is so crucial, the impeachment, and here's why. In 2009, you know, there was the look forward, not back. There was a desire to deal with the crisis at hand. There was a sense that spending political capital on accountability for the previous administration would be wasted when it could be put to use on, you know, getting the votes now. The impeachment has closed the door on letting everyone just say, well, whew, that was weird, huh? Like, no, we have to go back and litigate that thing. The thing that happened 2 weeks ago, when the mob, incited by the president, like, apparently beat a cop to death, that's not in the past. That has to be dealt with in a formal constitutional procedure in which, before the nation, we will litigate what happened and the president's culpability. And I think that is so important because it demands that we don't just turn the page on it, because we can turn the page on it, because there's going to be a trial, and thank God there's going to be.
Now, of course, we did have, we're in this rare situation where we can see how an impeachment affected Donald Trump and his supporters, right? The first one arguably had no effect.
Yeah.
I bet if you did exit polling on whether or not, you know, people in November were choosing based on...
Oh, I think it had...
This one does feel different. I mean, maybe just wishful thinking on my part that people would perceive this differently.
Yeah, I think, well, he's less powerful.
Right.
He's not the sitting president of the United States. He's not facing re-election immediately. And, you know, I think there's a real choice to be made for the Republican Party and the leadership, particularly McConnell, who I think basically holds his fate in his hands. McConnell wants the 17 votes.
You think he can get them?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That if he wants them, he can get them. I just think that it does come down to McConnell, and I do think there are probably 17 votes if McConnell wants it to be the case. And what that would mean, I think, is afterwards, were he to be removed, there would be a majority vote about barring him from future office, which I think is a no-brainer. Obviously, this person can't be trusted with the public trust after what he's done. It's not a close call. And, you know, if you're the Republican Party, it's like you have a very rare opportunity that is almost never afforded anyone to, in an official and binding way, repudiate this poisonous presence in your midst. That, you know, you don't really ever get to do that. You can shun people. You can say, I won't take his endorsement, yada, yada. This is like a binding constitutional procedure to say the man has forfeited the public trust.
Well, the interesting calculus, and I think we're dealing with a lot of people who are pretty calculating, is, you know, if you are a Hawley or a Cruz, I would think a specter that would hang over any future ambitions you have for the office of the presidency would be that Donald Trump would run again.
Yeah.
So even though I think they are playing to a base that also supports him and would be furious if they voted to impeach him, like, I mean, what are their odds in 2024 as a actual presidential candidate if Donald Trump decides to run for office
again? I agree completely, and I think that's partly the calculation. The other part of it, I think, too, is if you're Hawley or Cruz or any of those people, if the party goes in the Trumpian direction, which it may, you're not going to be the nominees.
Right.
Like, if that's the way they go, they're not going to be like, oh, the Princeton Harvard clerk who's got a beard and, like, is, like, from Texas, you know? Like, oh, the banker's son who went to private school and, you know, went to Yale and wrote the book on Teddy Roosevelt, like, who now is Mr. Populist? Like, that's, I don't think it's happening. I mean, it's going to be like Don Jr. Yeah. Like, who are we kidding? So,
or somebody who we haven't conceived of yet.
Exactly. Yes.
Like, if Trump continues to, you know, exponentially play out.
Yes.
It will get Trumpier in a way that we cannot.
Yes, we don't know the person who has a YouTube channel right now.
Yeah,
that's going to be the next.
Right, who's like named after a dessert? Yeah. It's like, no, it's going to be creme brulee. He's like this alt right guy. Hey, you have a fan, somebody that I'm a fan of, Leslie Jones.
Yes,
I think one of the great developments of this past year.
So fun
is that she Game of Thrones ended and she started watching MSNBC.
So
no, of all the things we could have predicted. But I do, this is one of my new favorite things, is when I have guests on, is showing them a clip of, this is Leslie Jones watching Chris.
He got this condescending, get your together look. Look at this look he got on his face. I am sick of saying this to you, mother, and y'all know that this is wrong, that what's happening. Why ain't you doing nothing? You know what? I'm going to Chipotle.
I forget, every time we show a Leslie clip, our energy bill goes up from all the beeping.
Yes.
Hey, I know you're going to be on air tonight for a couple of long chunks tonight.
For a couple long chunks, yeah.
We're very lucky to have you on the air.
Oh, it's so great to be here.
Thanks for making the time. All In with Chris Hayes airs weeknights at 8 on MSNBC.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.